From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Happy, happy, happy Thursday, everybody. It's The Dice Men Cometh here. It's Thursday the 14th of February. Do you know what that means, boys?
It's the day after my anniversary.
It's 2 days after my birthday.
It means it's the day we record the Dice Men show?
Yes, it is. It's also, as they were calling it at work today, Heart Day.
Not Valentine's Day.
But look, on this Valentine's Day, it's a great opportunity for all those of you with a significant other to get together and play couples games, like the amazing, amazing, amazing best game for me of 2018, Fog of Love.
Not Twister.
Perhaps you might need a larger group for that. You might have more than one significant other. We appeal to all sorts here at The Dice Men Cometh.
Mm-hmm.
Consenticle, that's another one, Leon, that you've had gangling around in your house.
It's a thing that I played that time that happened.
Yeah, and if you're into human tentacle relations, then Consenticle is arguably the best game in the world that represents that.
I would say so, yeah. There's a small list, to be honest. There's that and... Yep.
Well, it is, as we said, the 14th of February, Thursday. It's episode 251 of The Dice Men Cometh. We're here in Hobart going live out over the airwaves and live onto the interwebs. We are going to talk about some of the games we've been playing.
We sure are.
And I'm going to piggyback onto Leon's chat about Monopoly and replacements for Monopoly.
So you're going to take the Monopoly that Leon had on the Monopoly chat from last week.
I'm going to then monopolise it.
Oh, my God.
And talk about what I think are some better games.
I think we need to play a three-hour game with no ending to solve this situation.
Oh, let's do it live on air.
No.
And then we're going to talk about a game we played recently. Garth, you've been spending some screen time not in the toilet for a change.
Correct. I have been on Steam.
Steam.
Playing some form of evolutionary type game where you all vie for food around the watering hole.
Okay.
It's only just come out, so that's been quite exciting. And look, we would clearly be stupid not to continue mentioning our BorderCon competition.
Absolutely, yes. The only place.
It only started last week. It's only going to go till the end of March, which seems like a long time away, but it's really not.
No.
So if you want a chance to win the only two available tickets in the cosmos, you need to get listening to The Dice Men Cometh, which, as Mark said, tonight is episode 251 on Valentine's Day. We're going to throw to a song and then we'll come back and Leon is going to talk to all of us about being a good critter.
Hi, this is Ella from Ella Loves Board Games, and my favorite podcast is The Dice Men Cometh.
That was the Chemical Brothers with Get Up On It Like This here in the Edge Radio Studios, 99.3 FM, and you are with The Dice Men Cometh, here to talk all about board games, card games, tabletop games, all sorts of games. And Leon.
Yes.
We played a game recently, surprisingly.
We did.
Would you like to tell us about it?
I can certainly. What was it called again, Garth? Grimslingers.
Grimslingers. Good boobos.
Good fellas.
Oh, I don't know. I don't pay attention.
So I need to mention the reason I say that is we have our little Facebook Dice Men chat, and Garth said, we said, what are we going to do this week? We haven't actually played that much of late. Oh, we can play that. We can talk about that Grimslingers game. Leon, you can host that. You can do that. And he said it about two or three times. Mm. I eventually snapped and went, are you guys actually taking the piss out of me? What are you talking about?
Well, Grimslingers is like a Doomtown type of Wild West game, isn't it?
So, have you played it? It's really good.
No. So anyway, so Garth's an arse is what I was getting to. But now let's actually talk about the game Good Critters, which is a 4-8 player game by Arcane Wonders. Now, it is based on a German game that came out 2 years ago, which I'm not at all going to even try to pronounce. I didn't even write it in my notes.
Oh, it starts with T.
There's two words starting with T. It's like T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T- politicians because they're money hungry, funnily enough. Who'd have thunk
politicians,
it?
You say?
I know. But this reprint that is a part of the Dice Tower Essential line, you are playing as criminal critters. Mark, I believe you were an alligator.
I was.
Oh, there was a sexy cat lady involved.
Trent was a rhino.
He was indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Garth, what were you? You were some sort of skunk.
Skunk, raccoon.
Carl was a lemur, I think.
Yes. All the types of critters. Anyway, so what you're going to be doing is you've just pulled off the heist of the century. And what you're going to do is you've got back to your hideout already. You don't have to worry about the cops at the moment. But what you've got to do is you've got to split up the loot. For some reason, you didn't decide to talk about it earlier. So whoever is chosen as the boss will get these set of loot cards in front of them, and you can distribute them however you desire.
Ooh.
And then it's up to the crew to have the final say on whether it's any good or not. If the crew doesn't like the split, they might just tell the boss to take a hike and put another critter in charge. And in the end, the critter that collects the most valuable loot, when the fuzz turn up, get it? Because animals and police. And,
yeah, I get
then
that.
They are the winner.
And I immediately like the fact that this game doesn't set out to be fair.
No.
Because the first action that you're going to do is more than likely an incredibly unfair distribution of wealth.
Yeah.
So I was the first player. The first player in this situation is the person that owns the game, which is me. And what was the thing I did on my first turn, Garth?
You gave me precisely $0. No,
I gave you.
You gave me $2.
And what was my reasoning for this, that I was happy to share with the whole table?
Because I always win these kinds of games.
Because Garth's a sneaky so-and-so, and he's going to win this if we don't stop him.
Yes, that was exactly the words I said. Because the thing I need to mention about good critters is that the way it is played is exactly what I just said. You've got these loot cards out in the middle. You distribute them however you want amongst the number of players, and then everyone has this same set of five cards in their hand. Some of them are to vote, yes, I want this to happen. Some of them are to vote, no, I don't want this to happen. Then there's other things like you can skim money off the top of the deck, but only the first person that plays that card gets to do it that round. So if anyone else plays it, they get nout.
That's good.
You have a, a shoot card or an attack card, essentially, you could play.
Yes.
Which was, it was a rob. You could rob from
just
a friend.
You simply rob someone.
Yeah, or you could guard. So if they try and rob you and you've played a guard, you will take a bit of loot from them. And you also do that by putting a little threatening marker in front of them, which you have to do if you intend to rob somebody.
And that, again, is really cool because all it does is put that seed of doubt in front of the player who has received the threat token because, ooh, is that raccoon really going to try and take some money from me? Are they really going to try and rob me? Or is that raccoon just a cheeky so-and-so who's putting that there to distract me?
Yes, it puts the willies up them, to use the PG terminology. But the thing about this game is we've talked a lot recently about a game that I've been introduced to and the favourite of you two, which is Chinatown, which is a game that's all about negotiation. However, in that game, there is a little bit of luck because you are drawing tiles from a bag, and whatever tiles you get, you know, they're the ones you have to barter with.
Correct. And look, it must be said, the last round does become a maths fest as well.
Yes.
Because you're so busy calculating, well, if I do get that, you know, laundry from Mark, and I'm giving that building to Leon.
Yep.
So there can be a bit of AP that happens that last round, so play it with the timer.
Yep. Whereas in the game, good, because the only uncertainty in this entire game is, A, the cards that are going to come out each round in the middle for, like, that you get to split up, but also when the fuzz come out. And that's a card that's in the deck, and when that card comes out, the game ends immediately. You know it's in the bottom, like, four-fifths of the deck, and that changes position depending on how many players you have, but you know it's down near the bottom. So the only kind of luck or uncertainty is when that card comes out. Other than that, and I said this before we'd even play it, I said that to everybody. I said, the person that wins this game is the person we let win this game. Because,
or not me.
Or because there is flat out no luck. The person that wins is the person that has somehow got away with it, which is exactly what it would be like. You watch these type of crime films. It's never the big brash guy who walks in there, takes all the money and leaves. It's always kind of the unasserting one that you don't really think of too. And that's exactly what happened in the game that we played.
Are you calling me a sneaky so-and-so?
No, because you do it blatantly in front of everyone, yet for some reason they still let you do it. So I need to mention the fact that two of the people we played with, our friends Carl and Joel, who are, let's probably say, the two least aggressive gamers out of our little group.
Yeah, a little bit more passive.
They were the two. I think Joel won in the end.
Yes, quite easily.
And then Carl was behind him. And then the rest of us were all kind of tied-ish, way behind them, because we were all just destroying each other. But even still, Garth, I've got to give it to you, and this pains me to do so.
Okay.
I said repeatedly, at the start of the game, we've got to stop Garth. He will win this game. I promise you he will talk you out of it, which then straight away you try to talk everyone out of it.
Of course.
You still ended up beating me by, like, it was very close, like 1,000 or 2,000, so a card essentially.
Yep.
And my entire game was to be sensible and try and make the best deals I could for me, but also to stop you.
Correct.
And yet still, everyone else on the bloody table, I'm looking at you, Marky boy, let Garth get that. So I'm thinking that if I didn't stop you from the get-go, you probably would have won the bloody thing.
I like to think so.
Yeah, but that didn't happen because I stopped you. So morally, I think I won this game.
I think because I beat you, I morally won.
I was going to say, I even tried the total flip of having a round as leader where I gave myself no money.
Yep.
I think that one got passed through, surprisingly.
Mm.
And, of course, because I can't remember whether I either skimmed or stole
yep.
from someone that round, so at least I got some. But, yeah, I ended up really near the bottom of the pack, and we were at our end of the table, I guess, with the three of us and Trent. We were very aggressively stealing from each other, screwing each other over.
Oh, look, this is a great conversation to try and have without using any swear words.
Yeah.
Because there were a lot of swear words going around the table, particularly, as you say, Mark, on the end, which was Leon, myself, Trent and Mark.
Yep.
And then there was Carl and Joel sort of tucked away in the corner, nice and neatly being nice to each other and eating our chocolate. And that was fine, but...
And Bo? Was Bo there?
No.
No.
No, it was all just, you know, the six of us, and it was very cordial but also very aggressive. And, and look, what I loved about it is that... You all play your card face down, but because there's this uncertainty about these almost never stopping moving threat markers that move around, and as soon as someone places one in front of Leon, oh, well, I might move mine in front of Leon too because that'll really screw him up. And then, oh, but the person who's put it in there is Trent, and I don't see Trent's a threat, so I might move my threat marker to Mark because I want to make sure that Mark just guards rather than tries and steals any money from anyone else, and then Mark will do something. And I really liked that. Even though you'd played your card, the threat marker just came and went and moved around the table quite a lot. But then there was also, until the very last person put their card, cards were being swapped in and swapped out by each player really quite, I guess, aggressively because they were going, well, if that's going to happen now, I need to adjust my strategy every single turn depending on what you think people are doing. And that's keeping people engaged. I like it.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the voting.
Yeah.
Because I found that... fascinating, this game. You've got the situation where when the leader splits up the loot, you need to have at least, you need more yeses than noes to get that split approved. I think if it was a tie, the split still gets approved, but then the leadership passes on.
Yeah, because the first time we played, I was the leader straight away, and then I retained that for three rounds because I got the vote through. Whereas if no one had voted yes or no and it was split, the vote then just moves to the next person.
Yeah, and if the noes outweigh the yeses, then the deal doesn't go through.
Yep.
Two more cards come out, and then but then it passes on to the next person. Now, the thing that I found really fascinating is you've got the ability to vote no or yes.
Yep.
But then you've also got, as we said, the ability to skim off the top, the ability to rob someone, the ability to guard yourself from being robbed, and which then enables you to rob from the person trying to rob you.
Yeah, but only, like, that's a big gamble, I think, to play that guard card, because there is a very high chance that the person who's played that threat marker
is not
going to
rob
with you.
That's
you've... You forfeited your action, and forfeiting an action is a massive penalty,
but,
I think.
But not only that, Garth, while you're playing any of those other actions, you're not playing a yes vote or a no vote.
Mm-hmm.
So it was amazing how many times that, you know, we would be lucky to have three votes out of the six cards because everyone else was doing something else. And sometimes you think this is an awesome deal, but because all the people that you did a great deal for are thinking about, well, I'm going to screw someone else over, so I'm going to do a non-voting action, then you might have the people that you did screw over saying, well, screw you, I'm going to vote no.
Yep.
Sometimes it was quite easy and surprisingly for the no's to win because everyone else was caught up in... It's not that the yes and no's were a waste of a card, but it was just like, you've just got one more opportunity to get something. Other people will do the voting.
Yeah.
I'll do some other screwing over here. And surprisingly, that often didn't happen. So I, as I said, I found that fascinating, fun, and even as the leader thinking, because I'm going first, I can skim and no one can stop me.
Yes.
That's a great first move. But that's one less yes vote to have me be the leader again, which means someone else has got to vote yes in case one person votes no, and then you need another yes vote. So that it was really tight and tricky, those votes. I found it fascinating.
And also you've probably spent half your turn before that chatting up people saying, listen, I've given you a good thing, let's vote yes on this, knowing full well that you're going to skim off the top, and then you've kind of lied to them.
But that's exactly what Mark did on his turn when he didn't so bloody high and mighty, let me polish my own halo, didn't put any money in front of him.
Yeah.
The very first thing he did was then skim.
Yeah.
But because he had given no money to himself, why would he vote yes? So he clearly wasn't going to vote for this thing to go through. And it just, that's probably the one thing I'm undecided to whether I like that. I would be very interested to see whether mechanically there was a card that would offer a yes plus action that you could do.
Well,
or a no plus. Yeah, well, you say that, really, but you've got to remember that the fact that this game, that, you know, with all the table talking going on, that you can basically say to people, right, you best do this or next round I'm going to get you, or that kind of stuff. So there's threatening, there's blackmailing, but there is actually bribery.
Absolutely.
And there is official bribery. So in this game, like many games, you can say, right, you've got these five tokens that everybody starts with, and they're worth $1,000 at the end of the game. What you could, anytime, at any point during the game, you can make a deal with somebody that doesn't have to be binding at all, but you have to use one of these cards to make the deal. So you can either give them that token saying, this is $1,000, or you can give it to them also with another one of your loot cards to try and sweeten the deal. But it's not binding at all. You could say, oh, please vote, or can you please vote a guard, use a guard card on this, or don't skim, please, because I want to skim, something to that effect. However, that's in a lot of games. What this game does have is an official bribe, and what that is that you give somebody one of these tokens, and then you put on top of it a little circle token that says either yes or no. And what that means is that if they vote the way that you've tried to bribe them, they will get that money straight away.
Yeah.
If they decide to not do that, that money comes back to you. So that is the exact incentive that you're just talking about, the kind of the yes, no, plus. If everybody on the table goes, no, we want this deal to go ahead, two people could be bribing them at the same time going, please vote yes, please vote yes. They don't have to do it, but it is literally money sitting there that they could take just by going, well, I don't really want to vote yes on this, but I've just been offered $4,000. I might as well vote yes and see how I go.
And it is unusual in that you can have binding and non-binding agreements, because usually in games that you go each way, you have non-binding or you have binding. This, you can do both. Yeah. You can even do both in the same deal with the same or different people in the same turn.
And there is one thing about the cards that you put out in the middle. They're all various dollar amounts of 2, 3, 4, and 5,000. And there are also different sets. There are things like there is jewelry, there is art, there is diamonds, that kind of stuff. But the thing is, in the base game of Good Critters, that actually doesn't mean anything.
Right.
It specifically says in the books that this will probably be used in like an expansion later. I think that's a little bit cheap, because we all know what that's going to be. It's going to be, if you have a certain amount of these, you get such
collection.
Why could that not have been in the base game? I find that a bit annoying. But again, this game was like 20, 30 bucks Australian, so next to nothing, and a game that you can play with up to 8 people. So now I wanted to mention that we played with 6 people, and we talked about it afterwards, and we all relatively liked it. No one flat out disliked it, but this is a game that you need to pick the group you play with.
Absolutely.
Some people would hate this with an absolute passion and never want to go near it again. So pick your battles and don't play with that person that you know is not the best at sport or not a very good loser. But we need to mention the fact that we play a lot of games. Other games exist. So, this game plays 4 to 6.
Yep.
Also in my collection is Sheriff of Nottingham, which plays, I think, 3 to 5. But let's face it, it's a 4 to 5 player
Absolutely.
Game.
Don't play it with less.
It also happens to be a Dice Tower Essential game as well. So the same guys that did this. And then there is Cash and Guns, which is very similar to this in the fact that you've got the loots in the middle and you split it up and whatever. And that game plays, again, between like 5 and 8. And with expansions, can play up to 10 or 12 or what have you. So my problem with Good Critters is that I enjoyed it for the simple fact that it is as pure as I said, that there's no luck, it's all about the best negotiator will win. But my problem is that if I had 4 or 5 people, I think I'd probably rather play Sheriff of Nottingham. And if I had 6, 7 or 8, I think I'd probably rather play Cash and Guns because both of them, they're quicker and I don't necessarily know if they're better, but yeah, but I think...
Big foam guns.
Big foam guns are great.
That's a hard thing to try and beat.
Yeah, and Sheriff of Nottingham is awesome and snapping the little locks on those bags and the whole...
Oh, yes.
Is he going to do it? Is he not? I'll give you a bribe. I'll give you one of my chickens.
The amazing app that has never worked once.
Yeah.
So don't play with the official app.
So Good Critters is kind of a half thumbs up for me that it's still in my collection. I haven't got rid of it and I don't plan on anytime soon, but I may do because I don't know if I'd play it over those two other games.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep.
I think that particularly for me, Sheriff is just such a great game where so much of it is about the conversation between me as the person trying to get something past the sheriff or me as the sheriff trying to figure out who amongst you is actually telling the truth and who amongst you is not. And I find that conversation really interesting on a person-by-person basis. This, I'm invested, but I'm not nearly as invested as I am in Cash and Guns, but particularly for me, Sheriff of Nottingham is that game.
I think there is a market for this... Firstly, people who haven't played either of those two games, perhaps.
Sure, of course.
But also, I mean, Cash and Guns, there is a little bit more expense involved because you've got those guns. Some people maybe are not comfortable about, yes, they're foam guns, but, you know, pointing guns at people's faces.
Fair play.
You want to play with children, maybe. I mean, I love that game myself. So I think there is a market there. And also, I think the price point.
Well, as I say, it's cheaper than both of them.
Yes.
And you could argue if some groups went, I love this, I like it better than both those two games.
Yeah.
You don't need either of those two games.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say. It fits into that category, but I'm just not too sure where I stand on it.
I think, though, if you haven't played Sheriff of Nottingham, you haven't played Cash and Guns, you haven't played maybe that style of game and you're not sure whether it's going to fit your group, this is a great opportunity to see what it's like at quite a low cost point. Look, it's a lovely production. The art is really nice. It's bright and colourful and it's hardy. You're not going to wear the cards out soon.
It is a game that I think I would quite like to play at a convention with a big group of strangers.
Yes,
you could have some of those gamers in there that's really not going to like it, but I think it'd be interesting to see the different dynamics and whatever else, because with something like Cash and Guns, it's a bit awkward, as you said, kind of pointing guns at random people you don't know, and then the person that knows that game the best will probably end up winning, and the people that are friendly in that group will probably end up pointing the guns at each other because they don't want to point them at strangers, whereas in Good Critters, you kind of have to go for the throat. That's what you've got to do.
Absolutely. And look, I would certainly happily go and play that again with seven of my favourite friends, because it is a good fun.
Yeah.
It does play a bit longer than it probably should for what it is, in my opinion. And again, it's in that Sheriff of Nottingham space, so I would definitely choose that if I had five people or less. But happy to play it. So that was...
Good Critters.
Good Critters, not Grimslingers.
No, Grimslingers. That's not a thing.
It is a thing, but it's not this particular thing.
Yes.
So look, we're going to come back from a song, and Mark is going to monopolise the microphone with his Monopoly monologue, following on from Leon's conversation last week. So you're with the Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
This is the Dice Wife, Sarah. And when I want to listen to a podcast that sounds like at least one of them is sexy, I listen to the Dice Men Cometh. Breathless.
That was Breathless by Dan Vandermeer, a Tassie lad.
Woo-hoo.
Here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, talking to you about all the board games, your card games, your role-playing games, all the types of games that we can. Now, last week I talked about Monopoly and the juggernaut that it is and how we killed it by giving you much better suggestions. But we ran out of time because we just do like to chat here, as I am doing right now. So, Marky Boy had plenty on his list that he's going to tell us about right now.
Yeah, and I remember we had a brief discussion off air, Leon, before your talk, where I sort of took a different tangent. Because for me, it's not so much a Monopoly killer is... I mean, look, every game pretty much is a better game than Monopoly. But the thing that brings people back to the Monopoly table every time is they know how to play it. It's familiar.
Mm.
And so they can sit down and they can get right into it, even though if it's got some sort of little wrinkles of newness, because you're playing Mario Kart Monopoly or Tassie Hawk Monopoly or Fortnite Monopoly or whatever, you pretty much know how the game works.
Uh-huh.
And we've also heard Garth talk about the troubles he's had trying to get his lovely partner Joe to play games because he starts explaining the rules and after 30 seconds or a minute...
You know that age-old monkey with cymbals going in someone's head? That's what's going on, except that monkey's also walking out of the room.
Yeah, okay.
And I love her, especially on Valentine's Day, and yesterday was 17 or 18 years together, so it's been a while.
Congratulations.
However... Yeah. I'm generally pretty good at explaining games, but Joe is just not into a game that takes longer than a minute to explain.
Yeah, so, I mean, not only is there the rules explanation, but there's actually the length of the game itself. As I can't remember if I said it last week, but for me, certainly, when people ask me about, oh, you mean Monopoly, when I start talking about board games, I always say, hey, look, you know, one of the flaws with Monopoly is it's 30 minutes fun that takes two hours plus to play. So... with that in mind, those two things in mind, I thought about what 10 games would I introduce people to that I think will steer them away from Monopoly so that they're nice and quick to play, but very much so that these are 10 games I think I can give you an overview of the game in less than 30 seconds, and a full rules explanation is probably only going to take about 3 minutes.
Ooh.
Now, Leon.
Yes.
You did mention two of these, so I'll give you that. That being Machikoro.
Of course.
We might even call it a Catan killer as well as a Monopoly killer.
Possibly.
And you also mentioned Ticket to Ride. Now, you mentioned you like the Europe one because, hey, you can learn about European geography while you're playing. I myself prefer the original.
Yep.
Although I do play it with the 12 expansion, which gives
bigger
you the
cards.
Extra cards and the bigger cards.
What game are you guys talking about?
Oh, shut your face.
Ticket to Ride Guts. So no, I know all about the United States of America. It was actually quite interesting when I went to America, when I took my son to university there, I used some of that knowledge because I remembered where states were and what cities were in what states.
There you go.
Anyway,
did you get yourself a gold star?
Some tickets.
Okay.
I had some tickets on myself. So I have 8 more games to complete my list of 10 where I can give you a rundown in 30 seconds and explain the rules in about 3 minutes. Now, I'm not going to because we don't have that long. But firstly, Leon, I was so amazed this one wasn't in your list.
Right.
King of Tokyo.
I mentioned it briefly.
Did you? Well, you know, hey, you're all monsters vying for control of Tokyo. You're either in Tokyo or out of Tokyo. You're rolling these big chunky dice. 1, 2, 3 are points. Claws do damage. Hearts heal you up. That's pretty much about it.
And what about then, the green tokens?
Then there are some little nuances. But
the jellies.
The great thing is you can actually start playing because no one's going to get enough jellies in the first turn to get a card. You can almost play
that's
the first.
Not true.
You can almost
at all.
Play the first round and then introduce them. But you can get them hooked in with the visuals and with that 30-second elevator pitch.
Absolutely.
Don't you agree?
And the little player boards are really nice with the rolling dials for your health and for your victory points. And yeah, the first player's turn is really, I've rolled some stuff, this is what it means.
Yeah.
Just try and either kill that thing, or if you are that thing, try and get some points and then get out.
You can almost explain how the dice work after you've rolled them.
Agreed.
It's got the Yahtzee mechanic, which is very familiar to people, almost as familiar as Monopoly. So I think it's a no-brainer. The second one, which is actually the fourth one, again, Leon, I don't know if you mentioned this one.
He was really listening last week.
Just listen to me from time to time.
We have a name for this game which we can't say on air.
Ah, yes.
But commonly it's known as No Thanks.
Yes.
I think it's got a German name, but I can't remember what it was. But this is a such
Nein
simple
Dunker?
Game. No. Oh. It's such a simple game. You've got a little deck of 30-odd cards, just numbered 3 to 35, I think, and these little plastic chips. And basically, you're trying not to collect cards, but you'll collect some. So if you do collect some, you want to make sure you collect them in runs because only the lowest card of a run counts as points towards your score at the end. And if you either have a choice on your turn of take the card or you say no thanks
or, put in a chip.
Or whatever we say, and you put in a chip.
And that all sounds really easy at the start. And then you run out of chips.
Yeah.
And then bad things happen.
And you have to start taking things you don't want.
Correct.
It is the bestest of games.
And so simple. Now,
yeah.
Possibly the thing against this game is for anyone who's getting excited about playing an amazing board game and then they see you pull out a little deck of cards. It just has numbers on it.
It's our
little crappy red plastic chip.
It's our pub game. This game lives in my wife's handbag.
Yeah, but it's also an anywhere in public game.
Yeah.
It is, again, as long as you play with the right people and if it's the three of us, you tell us not to say any naughty words.
Yeah.
Then we have played it in cafes at breakfast time. Yeah. We played it at lunch. We played it at dinner. And it is the best fun. It is so good.
Now, for someone who's looking for a little bit more depth, but you still have that 30-second elevator pitch and you can explain the rules in maybe 5 minutes, but visually you are so drawn to this game that you're going to stay there for the 5 minutes. Azul.
Okay.
I have found this really easy to teach to non-gamers. As I said, firstly because they're so drawn to the little tiles. They're fascinated by them. You talk to them about how they're tiling their bathroom in Portugal, and then you explain a little bit about the placement rules, and then you can even go into the scoring again almost after the end of the first round, after they've seen how easy it is to play around, and therefore they're drawn in. They're not going, you've lost me even before you've got to the end of the rules.
Yeah, and look, the physical look of the game will certainly get over the hurdle of, hi, have you ever wanted to be a Portuguese tiler?
Yes.
Because this game is going to let you live out that dream.
And Leon and I both now have played the Stained Glass of Sintra.
Yes.
Which, big shout out to our friends at Queen of Spades, because we both played it there.
Yes, about 3 weeks or so apart, there, but we certainly did.
Now, that one, I think that one is probably a little bit longer rules explanation. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to learn after you've played the base Azul. But for me, that is a winner, hands down. Again, another game which I was surprised it didn't make your list. Leon, although you may have touched on it briefly.
Just didn't listen to a word, did he?
Code Names. We talked about the other week how, you know, this, what's the other fancy one with the red stuff that people seem to be into these days? All the kids are talking about it.
Game of Thrones?
No, the one that's like Code Names but nowhere near as good.
Dixit?
No. Oh, Decrypto.
Decrypto. Okay. Oh. So forget about your Decrypto, kids.
Yes, please.
Come back to Code Names because you lay the cards out on the board and immediately people are drawn to the cards. They're drawn to the words. They're going, this is a curious jumble of words. And you say, I'm a spy and you're my partner. They're partners. This is how it works. And you almost play the first round as you're explaining it. It's so simple, yet so fun. And they get it straight away.
And out of all the games you've mentioned, this is the one that you will then play five or six times
exactly.
In a row, back to back to back to back to back, because you always leave that game going, oh, I could have done that better.
Yeah.
Oh, I should have said that clue, or I should have done this, or I should have done that. And the card's double-sided, so the possibilities are mathematically very stupidly high that you will have a whole bunch of different words on different combinations thereof.
And there is a version of this for everybody.
That's awesome.
If you're more of a visual person, you've got your pictures. If you like, there's Disney, there's Marvel,
there's Harry Potter, the Duet.
Yep. If it's just the two people, which I haven't played, but I've heard good things.
Yeah, my partner and I, Sarah, actually bought a copy while we were in Queen of Spades.
Ah.
We tried it there. We enjoyed it so much because we didn't have the other one. For a couples game, it's great. I do prefer the team game. But, hey, when it's just the two of you and you're having a lovely Valentine's Day evening, Code Names Duet can be perfect. Now, Leon.
Hello.
You definitely,
I can't believe this wasn't on your list last week.
You definitely did not have this one on your list.
Evidently.
And
it's
for me,
TI4.
It was probably the game
I
talked about the most, probably.
For me, this is the one that almost goes to the top. It should go to the top of everyone's list. Love Letter. It is so simple to explain. It's the perfect cafe dinner table game for your party of two to, I think you can play five. Mostly two to four, but I
think it's four with the base, and if you have the deluxe, it's eight.
Okay. But it's so simple, and again, It's like nothing. People who haven't played these type of games, it's like nothing they've ever seen. And they think, well, this is it. They might have that thought of, this is a bit dull. I'm trying to get a letter to the princess. But as soon as they play that first round and I say, hey, are you a clown? Or are you a...
guard?
Yeah. No, or the other... A bishop. Yeah, that's the one. It's clown in the... I've got the factory edition.
I've got the Georgian Oren wedding edition that was only a year or so ago. Thank you very much. Yes. Actually, as well as the base
and
game.
Yes, which my wife is in, but Garth and I aren't.
No. We that's one of the games I throw in my suitcase every single time I go anywhere because it takes up no space at all. It's so quick to play. If you're sitting there with your partner, you can play it. If you've got a couple of friends, you can play it.
Well, it's arguably the game that brought particularly, was it Japanese...
Yeah, Japanese
Asian
mini games.
Micro games to the market.
Yes. Good friend of the show, fantastic Australian game designer, Phil Walker Harding, took the... I don't know if he took the Seven Wonders mechanic, but he built on a game that had a lot of popularity amongst gamers, and he made it a game that anyone can play, particularly with families and kids. That is Sushi Go and Sushi Go Party. Once again... Most of the people out there who haven't played our games have never heard of card drafting, yet you show them this. It is so simple to show them. They might not get the nuances of how you score the points, even though it's laid out there on the little scoring card for you. But it's so easy to get into. And once again, Garth, this is the sort of game you go, oh, wow, that was quick. Let's go again.
Absolutely.
Now I think I get the hang of it.
Yeah, and that is a game that, again, my kids really, really love, starting with Sushi Go and then going up to Sushi Go Party, which gives you many more combinations. I love the fact that it plays, again, with Sushi Go Party. You can play with two people all the way up to eight. And because of the variety of it in the cards and the combinations, it scales really, really well. Mm. I love the fact that Phil has also made sure that it says, if you want a cutthroat game, these are the cards you use.
Yes.
If you want to just maximise and basically play it kind of like sort of a solitaire, I want to maximise my score and just everyone, we're competing for the biggest scores rather than screwing people out, then these are the cards that you use. I love that variety. But in terms of an elevator pitch and a rules explanation, it makes what can be very complicated easy.
Yeah.
And that is a big hurdle to getting non-gamers into our hobby.
And did I just hear... only a couple of days ago that it was officially announced that the Sushi Go, I'm not sure what the official
Sushi Roll.
Game is, Sushi Roll, the Sushi Go dice game, a game by Phil Walker Harding is coming out. Now, of course, we had a little sneak piece of this because I think
two BorderCons ago,
we got to play a prototype, and again, straight away we went, oh, this is a no-brainer.
Mm.
And it was just really him fine-tuning it to get the balance of what's on the dice. But again, it's so simple. It's going to draw people in.
And look, it's got an established IP now.
Yeah.
So it was right up there on the top of the BGG hot list, and probably still is when it was announced a couple of days ago. It will roar, fall off the shelves, jump off the shelves, roll off the shelves, because how can you not be attracted to sushi in dice format?
In big, fat, chunky dice
format. Yeah, if they are big dice like Quantum, oh, my God, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
But they're going to be good-sized dice, at least maybe King of Tokyo, I would hope. They're going to – it's going to be fun.
Ah, Quantum. God bless that game. Every time that's mentioned, oh, that game is so good.
It is.
Now, Leon.
Yes.
You didn't mention this one last week. You did mention it a few minutes ago.
Did I?
That is Dixit, the forerunner to Codenames.
So I did not mention that in the slightest.
No, I said Dixit and maybe Mysterium when we were trying to figure out that it was Decrypto that you meant.
Okay, right. Well, there you go.
He gets us confused quite often.
At least someone mentioned it. Someone who wasn't me mentioned it. But Dixit, now, look, it doesn't get a lot of love these days. Because of Codenames, because of Decrypto, because of Mysterium.
I would challenge that because my counter-argument to that would be it gets a lot of love within the newer people within our hobby because, again, we're a bit jaded and we've seen all that before. But what we fail to appreciate when you're sort of in as deep as we are is that there is this massive population that is now anywhere from a couple of days to a couple of years into this hobby. And they're starting on these paths that we did,
you know, some of them might have even played Ticket to Ride now, which is ahead of me in the curve. But those sort of gateway games that we call them are just so, so popular. And Dixit has had about a bajillion million expansions.
Yeah, I also think with Dixit, though, is that for my money, it's like a five or six or more player game. That could be one of the kind of the reasons where, like, obviously you get your crypto and your code name and stuff you can play with smaller groups. So there's always that.
I do like the Dixit Odyssey, which plays up to 12. There's so many expansions. You can combine all the cards together. It's got that zany art. Again, it draws you in, but the premise would be barely 30 seconds. It's so easy and so fun.
Yep.
And finally now, one, maybe this one is a tiny little bit gamery, but this is one of our absolute favourite games. No one mentioned this one. I cannot understand why. The Grizzled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is very, very simple to explain how those cards work.
And so uplifting when you're explaining it as well.
Yes.
How my friends. That amazing art by Tignes just draws you in. You really feel like you're there in the trenches with a bunch of hairy, smelly men in the First World War, but it really, it creates a shared experience. You really feel the struggle. I'm still excited to play this new version, the Armistice Edition that we haven't
sitting
played
at home,
yet.
Opened and unplayed.
But sitting at home on my house as well. Yeah, also,
don't forget that one. So there you go. The 10 were Machikoro, Ticket to Ride, original, King of Tokyo, No Thanks, Azul, Codenames, Love Letter, Sushigo, Dixit, The Grizzled. There is 10 games. You can have hours and hours of fun with your non-gaming friends, and they will love you forever.
Well, based off that criteria that you're going off, Mark, there's one giant game that you've missed out. What is the Dice Man game of the hour at the moment? Especially me.
Werewords.
Yeah. Is, again, 30-second pitch is that it's 20 questions, but with a game wrap around it, and you can quite literally put in your own words if you want. So you can customise this. If you have a family that are big into football, put 100 football players in there, or if I've done this with a few of my friends with professional wrestlers, because we're just that kind of awesome.
Oh, my goodness.
And, yeah, it's the bestest game in the world.
So can I just pose a question to you two, and I may know your answer, Leon.
Yes.
But I find a great introduction for non-gamers wanting to take that little bit of a deeper step and not just play a party game is where negotiation games are really powerful, because typically they are mechanically quite simple and it is all about the conversations that you have between the players. So, Leon, you go first. What is your go-to negotiation game? Is it Chinatown?
No, because that's so long.
And you don't have it?
Yeah.
So what would your
go-to... No, I do. I have Chinatown.
Oh, you've got it. You bought it.
Yeah, I bought one.
So what would be your go-to negotiation game to, you know, 4 to 5 people, whatever the player count needs to be to make your game fit? Because I like the fact that you can sit down and go, well, look, what we're going to do for a little while is we're just going to chat, and the chat might be nice and we might get a bit cranky, and that's all fine as long as we leave the table all as friends.
Mm-hmm.
What would you choose?
Oh, if I had to pick one.
I'm going to ask you, Mark, so start thinking.
Oh, I've got one.
You put me on the spot. I don't know. Probably Sheriff of Nottingham, probably.
Yeah?
Okay. I would have to say, I was thinking, before you said negotiation, I was thinking more like a resistance is a game where I put in front of 6 people and go, we're going to play this, trust me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, Sheriff of Nottingham is a good option because it's structured.
Yep.
All you're going to do is try and either put the legal things or the illegal things or some combination there in your thing. And then if you're the sheriff, you've got to decide who's lying to you.
Or with, obviously, mentioned before, with cash and guns. I have taught that game to many, many people, and I think I could teach that now without a book in front of me in about 30 seconds.
Cool. Yep.
So why not?
For me, And I love this game. I don't get it to the table nearly enough. It's Bonanza, the bean farming game, because you teach the rules, you teach how to farm the beans, but the game is so much more. The game is really in those negotiations, and it's very much trading. So it's not you give me this, I'll do something better, I'll do something later. It's you take this, I'll give you that, you plan it straight away. It's happening at the moment. It's not so much the favours, the non-binding deals. You're exchanging the cards straight away.
Yep.
And it's in those interactions around the table that you have fun. So for me, I love Bonanza. And it will, with the expansion, it will play up to, I think, 8.
Brilliant. All right, well, we better draw a line in the sand there. We are going to come back after a song. I'll have a quick chat about Evolution that I've been playing. We'll highlight again the Bordercon competition. Then we got to go and play some games. So we are the Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and here is your song.
Hello, everybody. Your friendly neighbourhood Leon here. We'll get you back to the action in just a few seconds, but first, a few bits of information for you. If you're a new listener to the show, or even an old listener, and you haven't left us a review on iTunes, we would really, really appreciate it. We have grown in leaps and bounds over the last few years, and a lot of the reason is because of those iTunes reviews. Because if you throw up 5 stars on there, people all around the world, which we have a fair few international listeners now outside of Australia, have found the podcast because of that. Second, do you know that we have a Patreon? Yes, if you've been listening to the Dice Men for the 5 years or more of goodness we've been pumping free into your ears, if you want to give a little bit back, we're not asking anybody out there to go giving us $20, $30 a month. That's ridiculous. What I would suggest personally is give us $1, $2, $3 a month. I do that myself with about a dozen or so podcasts. I don't even know it's gone from my bank account, but I can tell you that they sure know about it. Every cent we get, we do not spend at the pub as much as we might sound like we do. We spend it on going to conventions all around Australia and hopefully very soon internationally as well. And finally, also, if you wanted to get your hand on some Dice Men merchandise, jump over to redbubble.com, put in Dice Men in the search, and you'll be able to buy t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, etc., whatever you want. So, if you'd like to support us, we really appreciate it. We do love you all. You are all our friends and family, and hopefully you will be for many years to come. Now, back to the action.
Are you with the Dice Men Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM? That was Julian Baker with appointments. Now, we've got an appointment
to
play a game when we get out of here, but we've got a couple of minutes left, Garth.
We sure do, and that game is Black Orchestra, so I'm really excited about that. But before we get to that, what are you guys doing on the Queen's Birthday long weekend?
I think we're doing what we always do.
Absolutely. Oh, and as of a few hours ago, your friendly neighbourhood travel agent booked us flights to get to Melbourne.
Yes.
Which will then eventually get us to Albury, for we will be at Bordercon, which is 4 of the best days of gaming the Dice Men have all year round. Neil and the team, they do an amazing job. Yet again, it is sold out, and the Dice Men are very lucky to have the only 2 tickets in all of the universe to give away to 2 lucky people. In order to do that, all our listeners need to do is either send us an email to dicemencometh@gmail.com, send us a tweet to @dicemencometh, put it on Instagram, which is also @dicemencometh, put it up on Facebook. You can private message us or stick it up on the Facebook page. We do not care. All you're going to do is answer a very simple question, which is, what game are you going to bring to Bordercon? And what game are you going to play with the Dice Men? And they better be the same game, because we will play that game with you if you win that prize.
Double prize.
I know. Isn't it amazeballs, as the youth are saying?
Now, we, long-time listeners will know, we spend about the second half of the year talking about how much fun we've just had at Bordercon, we say, because we usually speak about Bordercon for such a long time. That is how much fun we have. If you want to be a part of that fun, jump on the Instagrams, the Twitters, the Facebooks, the Gmails, the YouTubes, however you create this message to us in an audio, video, visual, word-based, or any sort of description of what game you want to play with us and why.
And we got so many entries last year, it was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
The lucky winners flew all the way from WA just to spend some time with us and beat us at Snake Oil.
Yeah.
So we're happy for international guests to win. If they want to fly over and they will win the tickets, come on down to Albury, because you will not regret it.
Absolutely.
It is so much fun. And on that note, we're not going to talk about my experience with Evolution, because we have to get out of here. But
what about those people that have been hanging on for the whole show to hear that?
Needless to say, it's very good. You can download it on iOS and presumably on Google and get it for free to have an introductory play, and then you've got to pay some money for the full game. Yeah. I was playing it on Steam.
Yeah.
I got an early access key, so I was able to do that. It is very fun, but I'll talk about it more next week.
Okay.
because I'll get to play it some more between now and then.
Fantastic. Well, we've been the Dice Men Cometh. You've been so kind to listen to us this week talking more about games. Tell your friends about us. Leave us a review on iTunes. Check out our social medias and all those things. But most importantly, come back and listen again next week and play so many games.
Absolutely. Bye.
We will see you soon. Bye.
We are.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.